Okay, so have you ever thought about how a simple business decision could become like a legal nightmare?
Oh, yeah.
Like imagine you're a bakery and you use like a bad batch of flour, and then suddenly people are getting sick left and right, and you're facing a lawsuit from like the entire town for all the upset stomachs.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah, yikes.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of why understanding commercial liability insurance is so important.
Right.
It's not just about like those freak accidents that happen on your business property. It's about protecting yourself from a whole bunch of different risks that can just pop up when you are running a business.
Exactly. And it was exactly why we're diving deep into this textbook chapter today. You sent over some notes and highlighted some key points.
Yeah.
And my goal is to help everyone listening really grasp these nuances of commercial liability insurance enough to spot those potential pitfalls and maybe even negotiate better terms with your insurance agent.
I like that angle. It's not just about having insurance. It's about having the right insurance and understanding how to use it to your advantage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's start with the foundation. Why is this stuff so important? What kinds of risks are we actually talking about?
Well, think of it this way. Every business, no matter how careful you are, has inherent liability exposure. A customer slips and falls. A product malfunctions. A fire breaks out due to some negligence in a rented space.
Oh.
These things can happen, and the lawsuits can be financially devastating.
So it's not just about protecting your physical assets, but also safeguarding your business's financial health.
Precisely, CGL insurance acts as a financial shield. It provides the funds to handle those legal obligations and protects your business assets if you're found liable for damages.
Okay, that makes sense, but the term general liability seems pretty broad. What specific types of risks does this typically cover?
Well, the textbook breaks it down into several key categories. Let's start with premises and operations liability. This covers incidents that occur on your business property or arise from your operations.
So the classic slip and fall on a score, that kind of thing.
Exactly, but it goes beyond that. The textbook gives an example of a plumber damaging a customer's countertop while installing a dishwasher.
Oh.
It highlights how accidents can happen even when you're providing a service off-site and you're still responsible.
Okay, so it's not just about what happens within your four walls. What about situations where something you sell causes harm after it leaves your hands?
That's covered under products and completed operations liability. Think of the bakery example we started with. Even though the food poisoning happened off-site, the liability stems from the product itself.
And the textbook emphasizes that this is distinct from a premises liability claim, even if the incident occurs on your property.
Right.
That's a nuance I hadn't really considered before.
It's an important one, and it underscores how understanding the finer points of these coverages is crucial.
Now, this next one surprised me, Radoti. Fire legal liability. It made me realize how much I take for granted when it comes to insurance.
Yeah, this one often gets overlooked, but it's essential if you're renting property. It protects you if your negligence causes fire damage to the property you're leasing, covering the landlord's losses.
Suddenly leaving a candle burning doesn't seem so harmless anymore.
All right.
It makes you realize that this stuff is relevant to everyone, not just big corporations.
Exactly. And speaking of liability, extending beyond your immediate actions, there's also independent contractor liability to consider.
Right, because even if you hire someone else to do the work, you can still be held responsible if they mess up the textbook's example of a faulty furnace installation leading to a fire really drives that point home.
It does. It underscores the importance of not just having insurance, but also vetting your contractors thoroughly. And
Yeah.
then there's the tricky world of contractual liability.
This is where you agree to take on someone else's liability in a contract. Right. Like
Yeah.
if you sign an agreement to use a neighboring business's parking lot and someone gets hurt there.
Exactly. Most CGL policies exclude this type of liability, but there are key exceptions.
The textbook uses the acronym LEASE to help remember those exceptions.
Oh, that's good.
Lease of premises, easement agreements, agreements to indemnify a municipality, sidetrack agreements, and elevator maintenance agreements.
Remembering that acronym could save you a lot of headaches down the line.
Okay, so we've outlined some of the major risks that CGL insurance covers, but I'm guessing there are different levels of coverage within a standard CGL policy.
You're absolutely right. A typical CGL policy offers three main coverages: coverage A for bodily injury and property damage, coverage B for personal and advertising injury, and coverage C for medical payments.
Let's break those down, starting with coverage A. What exactly does bodily injury and property damage liability entail?
Coverage A is triggered by what the policy defines as an occurrence, essentially an accident, including ongoing exposure to harmful conditions like long-term pollution.
So if someone's injured due to a faulty product or slips on a wet floor in your store, that would fall under coverage A. And the insurer would not only pay for the damages, but also defend you in a lawsuit.
You got a pretty comprehensive safety net, but it's important to be aware of the exclusions. Intentional injury is a big one if you deliberately harm someone you're on your own.
Makes sense. What about work-related injuries? Does that fall under coverage A as well?
Not typically. Work-related injuries are usually covered by workers' compensation insurance, which is a separate policy altogether. There are also exclusions for things like pollution damage to property you own or rent, and liabilities related to aircraft, autos, or watercraft, except in specific circumstances outlined in the policy.
Okay, so coverage A is all about physical harm and damage to property. What about situations that damage your business's reputation?
That's where coverage B comes in, addressing personal and advertising injury. This covers things like libel, slander, copyright infringement offenses that damage reputation rather than causing physical harm.
So if a competitor spreads false rumors about your business or you accidentally use a copyrighted image in your marketing materials, coverage B could protect you.
Exactly. However, there are important exclusions here as well. Knowingly publishing false information or claims arising from incidents that occurred before your policy period wouldn't be covered.
It seems like the key is to understand what your policy doesn't cover as much as what it does cover.
Absolutely. And that brings us to coverage C, medical payments. This is a no-fault coverage for injuries that occur on your premises or as a result of your operations.
No fault, meaning doesn't matter who's to blame, the coverage will still kick in.
Right. It's designed for quick and smooth handling of medical expenses, regardless of fault. However, this doesn't cover your employees. That's workers' comp territory, and the expenses must be reported within 1 year of the incident.
Okay, so we've covered the three main types of coverage within a standard CGL policy, but I'm guessing there's more to it than just picking those coverages and calling it a day, right?
You're catching on quickly. There are some fundamental decisions you'll need to make when choosing a CGL policy, and perhaps the most important one is whether to go with an occurrence or claims-made form.
That sounds familiar, but can you refresh my memory on the distinction?
Think of it this way. An occurrence policy is like buying a lifetime warranty on a product if it breaks even years after you bought it. The warranty still covers the repair. A claims-made policy is more like a subscription. It only covers you while you're actively subscribed.
Okay, I'm starting to see the difference. So with an occurrence policy, it's all about when the injury happened. Even if the claim comes later and with claims made, it's about when the claim is filed within the policy period.
Exactly, and that distinction has some major implications. Let's say a customer gets hurt in your store today, but they don't file a lawsuit until after you've switched insurance companies with an occurrence policy. Your old policy would still cover it.
That's a relief, but I imagine there's a catch, right? Occurrence policies are probably more expensive.
They can be, yes. And that's why it's crucial to weigh the pros and cons of each option.
So what are some of the downsides of a claims-made policy, aside from the fact that it might not cover claims filed after the policy expires?
Well, with claims-made, you also have to consider the retroactive date. This determines how far back in time your coverage extends. If you choose a retroactive date, that's the same as your policy's effective date. You're only covered for incidents that happen from that point forward.
So if someone sued you today for something that happened a year ago, you wouldn't be covered.
Right. You can choose a retroactive date that's earlier than your policy's effective date to extend coverage back in time. But that usually comes with a higher premium.
Got it. So with claims made, you have to be really strategic about that retroactive date. And when claims are filed, what if a claim comes in after your claims made policy has ended, but the incident happened during the covered period?
That's where extended reporting periods, or ERPs, come into play. They provide coverage for claims reported after your policy expires, acting as a safety net. There are two main types, a basic ERP, which is automatic and free but has a limited time frame, and a supplemental ERP, which offers an unlimited extension but costs extra.
Okay, so it's like buying an extended warranty for your insurance policy. I'm starting to see how all these pieces fit together.
It's like a puzzle, isn't it? And understanding the intricacies of these different options is key to making informed decisions about your coverage.
Absolutely. It seems like occurrence policies offer more peace of mind, but they come at a price. And with claims made, you have to be very strategic and understand the nuances of things like retroactive dates and ERPs.
Exactly. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution. The best choice really depends on your specific business needs and risk tolerance.
This is all starting to make a lot of sense, but I can't help but feel like things could get even more complex when we start digging into the specific wording of a CGL policy. Are there any common pitfalls or areas where things can get easily misunderstood?
You're right to be cautious. CGL policies are notoriously dense and full of legal jargon. Even seemingly straightforward definitions can have significant implications for your coverage.
So where should we be extra careful? What definitions tend to trip people up?
One common area of confusion is the distinction between auto and mobile equipment. Most people assume they're the same thing, but they have very specific meanings in the context of a CGL policy.
Wait, so if I'm operating a forklift in my warehouse and it causes damage, that might not be covered the way I think it is.
That's a perfect example. A forklift is typically considered mobile equipment, not an auto. And the policy wording might have specific exclusions or limitations related to mobile equipment.
Wow, that's a detail. I would have definitely overlooked. What other definitions should we be wary of?
The terms your product and your work are often misunderstood. They extend beyond the physical goods or services you provide and encompass things like warranties and representations you make about your work.
So even if you provide a service and something goes wrong later, if the issue is related to a warranty you gave, it could still fall under your CGL coverage.
Exactly. It highlights the importance of not just skimming through the definitions, but truly understanding how they're applied in real-world scenarios.
This is making me want to pull out my own insurance policy and start highlighting things.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've talked about definitions. What about who's actually covered under the policy? I assume it's more than just the business owner, right?
You're right. While the named insured is the primary focus, CGL policies typically extend coverage to employees acting within the scope of their employment.
So if an employee accidentally causes damage while doing their job, the CGL policy would protect them.
In most cases, yes. However, it's worth noting that executive officers of a corporation or managers of an LLC might not have the same level of protection.
Interesting. So there might be situations where additional coverage is needed for those individuals.
It's definitely something to discuss with your insurance agent. Another important detail is that if the named insured passes away, their legal representative is covered under the policy to ensure business continuity.
That's good to know. It makes sure the business can keep running even in difficult circumstances. Speaking of keeping the business running, let's talk about policy limits. This is where things can get a bit confusing, right?
Absolutely. It's not just one big lump sum. There are multiple limits within a CGL policy, and understanding how they work together is crucial.
Okay, before we dive into those details, can we take a quick step back and talk about how to actually choose the right policy limits? What factors should businesses be considering?
It starts with a thorough assessment of your risk profile. You need to think about the potential financial impact of various scenarios. What's the worst case scenario? If a major claim arises, how much coverage would you need to protect your business from financial ruin?
So it's not just about picking a number that seems high enough. It's about really understanding the potential consequences of different scenarios.
Exactly. And you need to be aware that the limits within a CGL policy interact in complex ways. You have your general aggregate limit, which is the maximum the policy will pay for all covered claims during the policy period, excluding products completed operations.
And then there's a separate aggregate for products completed operations, right?
Yes. And that one is crucial for businesses with significant product liability exposure. If you have a lot of products out in the market, that limit needs to be high enough to cover potential claims.
Okay, so we have those two aggregate limits, and then there are also per occurrence limits, limits for personal and advertising injury damage to premises rented to you and medical expenses.
It's a lot to keep track of, which is why it's so important to discuss these details with your insurance agent and make sure you understand how each limit works and affects the others.
This is all starting to paint a much clearer picture of how CGL policies work and the things we need to be aware of, but it also highlights how important it is to be proactive and take steps to minimize our risk in the first place, right?
You're absolutely right. Insurance is just one piece of the puzzle. It's not a substitute for sound risk management practices.
So what are some things we can do proactively to minimize our liability exposure?
One key strategy is to implement robust safety and training programs for your employees. Well-trained employees are less likely to make mistakes that could lead to accidents and claims.
And that also means documenting those safety protocols and training materials, right?
Absolutely. Thorough documentation can be invaluable if a liability claim does arise. It demonstrates that you've taken reasonable steps to prevent accidents and train your employees properly, which can strengthen your defense.
That makes perfect sense. It's not just about doing the right thing. It's also about being able to prove that you've done the right thing. What other proactive steps can businesses take?
Another crucial step is having a robust contract review process. Contracts can significantly impact your liability exposure, and often businesses sign agreements without fully understanding the potential risks involved.
Yes, we talked about contractual liability earlier, like agreeing to indemnify another party or take on their liability. Those clauses can really come back to bite you.
Exactly. That's why it's essential to have any contracts your business enters into reviewed by legal counsel with expertise in insurance and liability.
So they can spot any red flags and help us negotiate more favorable terms.
And potentially recommend additional insurance coverage to address specific contractual obligations.
Yeah.
It's all about being proactive and thinking ahead.
Okay, so we have robust safety and training programs, thorough contract review. What else?
Don't underestimate the importance of regular communication with your insurance agent. Keep them informed about any significant changes in your business operations. New products, services, locations, increased revenue, anything that could impact your risk profile.
Because our insurance needs might change as our business evolves, right?
Precisely. It's not a set it and forget it situation.
Yeah.
Your insurance coverage should be a living, breathing thing that adapts to your business's needs.
Great advice. And speaking of adapting to changing needs, there's one more topic I wanted to touch on before we wrap up this part of our deep dive, cyber liability. This seems like a huge concern for businesses these days, and I'm wondering if traditional CGL policies even address those risks.
You're right to be concerned. Cyber risks are a reality for businesses of all sizes, and traditional CGL policies typically offer very limited, if any, coverage in this area.
So what's the solution? Do businesses need a separate cyber liability policy?
In most cases, yes. Cyber liability insurance is specifically designed to address the unique risks associated with data breaches, cyber attacks, and online operations.
What kind of coverage does a cyber liability policy typically provide?
It can cover a wide range of expenses, including data recovery costs, legal fees, regulatory fines, notification expenses for affected individuals, credit monitoring services, and even public relations efforts to manage reputational damage.
Wow, that's pretty comprehensive. It sounds like cyber liability insurance is becoming just as essential as traditional CGL coverage for many businesses these days.
Absolutely. In today's interconnected world, it's not a matter of if a cyber attack will happen, but when having dedicated coverage is no longer optional, it's a necessity.
This has been an incredibly eye-opening discussion. So far, we've covered a lot of ground from the different types of coverage and key policy definitions to strategies for minimizing risks and the importance of cyber liability. I'm feeling a lot more informed already.
I'm glad to hear that, but we've only just scratched the surface. There's still much more to explore in the world of commercial liability insurance.
I'm ready to dive deeper.
Welcome back to our deep dive into commercial liability insurance. I'm excited to continue our exploration and delve into some more practical strategies for navigating this complex landscape.
Me too. In part one, we really laid the groundwork exploring the different types of coverage and some of those tricky definitions that can make or break your protection.
Right. And we touched on those big decisions you'll need to make when choosing a CGL policy, like whether to go with an occurrence or claims-made form.
Yes. That was a big aha moment for
me.
It never occurred to me that there were different types of policies that are triggered by different events.
It's a critical distinction, and it often comes down to your specific risk tolerance and the nature of your business.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in an industry with long-tail liabilities where claims might not surface for years, like construction or manufacturing an occurrence, policy offers a lot more peace of mind.
But it comes with a higher price tag, right?
Often, yes. But for some businesses, that peace of mind is worth the extra cost. They'd rather know they're covered no matter when a claim arises.
That makes sense. So for businesses with more immediate short-term risks, a claims-made policy might be a better fit.
Potentially, yes.
Mm.
If your business doesn't have that long-tail liability exposure, claims-made can be a more cost-effective option. But you have to be really diligent about understanding those nuances we talked about, the retroactive date, extended reporting periods, to make sure you're truly covered.
Right, because it wouldn't be much help if a claim pops up after your policy expires, even if the incident happened during the covered period.
Exactly. That's why working with a knowledgeable insurance agent is so crucial. They can help you analyze your specific risks, explain the pros and cons of each type of policy, and guide you toward the best solution for your unique situation.
Okay, that brings me to a question I've been thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
When you're sitting down with an insurance agent, what are some key questions you should be asking to make sure you're getting the right coverage?
That's a great question. It's easy to get overwhelmed by all the jargon and technical details, but asking the right questions can really empower you to make informed decisions.
For starters, I imagine it's crucial to clarify exactly what is and isn't covered by the policy.
Absolutely. Don't assume anything. read the policy wording carefully, pay close attention to those definitions we talked about, and don't hesitate to ask for clarification on anything that seems unclear or ambiguous.
And what about those policy limits? How do you know if you have enough coverage? It seems like there's so many different limits to consider.
You're right. It's not just one magic number. There are aggregate limits, per occurrence limits, limits for specific types of claims. It can get complicated quickly.
So how do you even begin to figure out what limits are appropriate for your business?
It really comes back to that risk assessment we talked about. You need to think about the potential financial impact of various scenarios. What's the worst case scenario if a major claim arises? Could your business survive a significant payout?
It seems like there's a balance to strike, right? You want enough coverage to protect yourself, but you don't want to be paying for more insurance than you actually need.
Exactly. That's where the expertise of an insurance agent comes in. They can help you weigh those factors and choose limits that align with your risk tolerance and budget.
Another question that comes to mind. What happens if my business changes or grows? Does my policy automatically adjust to reflect those changes?
That's a smart question, and unfortunately, the answer is usually no. It's crucial to keep your insurance agent in the loop about any significant changes in your operations.
So if we expand into a new market, launch a new product line, or even just see a substantial increase in revenue, we should be talking to our agent.
Absolutely. Those changes could impact your risk profile and potentially create gaps in your coverage. You don't want to find out after the fact that you're underinsured.
This really underscores the importance of viewing your insurance agent as a partner in managing your business risks, not just someone you call when you need to file a claim.
Couldn't agree more. The more open and transparent you are with your agent, the better equipped they are to provide tailored advice and keep your coverage aligned with your evolving needs.
Okay, so let's shift gears a bit and talk about claims. What happens if an incident occurs that could potentially lead to a claim against my business? What are the first steps I should be taking?
Remember those responsibilities we talked about earlier? Well, this is where they really come into play. The most important thing is prompt notification.
So contact my insurance agent as soon as possible.
Exactly. Don't delay. The sooner the insurer is aware of the situation, the better. Provide them with all the necessary details about the incident dates, times, location, parties involved, and any relevant documentation you have.
And then, what? Do I just sit back and wait for the insurer to handle everything?
Not exactly. Cooperation is key throughout the claims process. Be responsive to the insurer's request for information. Provide any documentation they need promptly, and be prepared to participate in any investigations or legal proceedings.
So it's more of a collaborative effort between the insured and the insurer.
Absolutely. Working together ensures a smoother process and protects your interests. Remember, the insurance company is there to help you navigate this difficult situation.
This might seem like a silly question, but what kind of documentation should I be keeping?
Document everything. Seriously, I can't stress that enough. Keep detailed records of all incidents, even seemingly minor ones.
Like if someone trips on a rug in my office, I should be writing that down.
Yes. You never know what could turn into a claim down the line. Take photos, get witness statements, keep track of any medical expenses or repair invoices, anything that could potentially be relevant.
So if a dispute arises later, I have a strong paper trail to support my case.
Exactly. Thorough documentation can make all the difference in resolving claims efficiently and fairly. It also helps protect you from fraudulent or exaggerated claims.
This has been incredibly helpful. We've covered so much ground, from understanding the nuances of different policy types to making informed decisions about limits and navigating the claims process effectively. I feel much more prepared to have a productive conversation with my insurance agent.
That's what we're aiming for. Knowledge is power, and feeling empowered to make informed decisions about your insurance is crucial for protecting your business and your peace of mind.
Okay, before we move on, there's one more area I'd love to explore. We touched on it briefly in part one, but I think it deserves a deeper dive: cyber liability. It seems like these risks are constantly evolving, and I'm wondering if you've seen any emerging trends or new challenges businesses should be aware of.
You're right. The cyber landscape is constantly changing, and new threats are emerging all the time. One trend we're seeing is an increase in ransomware attacks, where hackers essentially hold your data hostage until you pay a ransom.
That sounds terrifying. Is that covered under a typical cyber liability policy?
Most policies will cover the costs associated with ransomware attacks, including negotiating with the hackers, paying the ransom if necessary, and recovering your data.
Wow. I'm starting to see how valuable this type of coverage can be. What other trends should businesses be watching out for?
Social engineering scams are becoming increasingly sophisticated. Hackers are getting really good at tricking employees into giving up sensitive information or clicking on malicious links.
So it's not just about having strong firewalls and antivirus software anymore. It's also about educating employees about these social engineering tactics.
Absolutely. Employee training is a crucial part of any comprehensive cybersecurity strategy. Make sure your employees are aware of the different types of scams out there and know how to spot red flags.
This is all starting to sound like a full-time job in itself.
It can be daunting, but it's an investment worth making. The costs associated with a data breach or cyber attack can be crippling for a business, both financially and reputationally.
Okay, so we've talked about ransomware attacks, social engineering scams. Anything else keeping you up at night these days?
One area that's becoming increasingly complex is the regulatory landscape. New data privacy laws are being enacted all over the world, and businesses need to make sure they're compliant.
I've heard about GDPR in Europe, but are there similar laws in the U.S.?
Yes. The California Consumer Privacy Act, or CCPA, is a major piece of legislation that grants consumers significant rights regarding their personal data, and many other states are considering similar laws.
So businesses need to be aware of not just federal regulations, but also state-level laws.
Exactly. It's a complex patchwork of regulations, and staying on top of it can be a challenge. But it's essential to make sure your business is collecting, storing, and using data in a way that complies with all applicable laws.
This is a lot to take in. It seems like cyber liability isn't just about preventing attacks. It's also about managing the legal and regulatory implications.
You've hit the nail on the head. It's a multifaceted risk that requires a comprehensive approach.
Okay, so if a business is considering purchasing a cyber liability policy, what are some key factors they should be looking for? What questions should they be asking their insurance agent?
First and foremost, you want to make sure the policy covers the specific types of cyber risks your business faces.
So a company that handles a lot of sensitive customer data would need a different policy than, say, a small consulting firm.
Exactly. You need to think about your data assets, your online operations, and your potential vulnerabilities.
What about those policy limits? How do you determine how much coverage is enough?
It's similar to what we discussed with CGL policies. You need to consider the potential financial impact of a cyber incident.
So things like data recovery costs, legal fees, regulatory fines, notification expenses.
Exactly. And you need to factor in the potential for reputational damage and business interruption. A cyber attack can bring your operations to a standstill, and it can take time to rebuild trust with your customers.
This is definitely making me rethink my own business's cybersecurity posture. I'm realizing there are a lot of areas I need to strengthen.
It's a journey and it's an ongoing process, but the more proactive you are, the better protected you'll be.
Okay, this has been incredibly insightful. I feel like we've really peeled back the layers of cyber liability and gained a much deeper understanding of the risks and how to mitigate them.
I'm glad to hear that. And remember, this is just the tip of the iceberg. There's always more to learn and new challenges to address.
Well, on that note, I think it's time for a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our deep dive into the world of commercial liability insurance, exploring even more advanced strategies and practical tips for managing these complex risks. Welcome back. We've covered so much in our deep dive into commercial liability insurance, from those CGL policies to cyber liability. Now I'm wondering, are there any like pro-level moves to minimize risk and maximize coverage, things that business owners don't even think about?
You're thinking like a risk management pro, and you're right, there are some next level strategies that can make a huge difference. One thing that often gets overlooked is having a solid contract review process.
Okay, I have to admit, when you say contracts, my eyes kind of glaze over. What do contracts have to do with liability insurance?
More than you might think, contracts can really impact your liability exposure. Remember our talk about contractual liability when you sign a contract? You're agreeing to terms and conditions that can shift responsibility and increase your risk.
Right, like agreeing to indemnify another party or take on their liability for something that might happen.
Exactly, and that's why it's so important to have any contract your business enters into reviewed by legal counsel. Ideally, someone with expertise in contract law and insurance. They can spot those red flags and make sure you're not taking on unnecessary risks.
So they could help us negotiate better terms or recommend additional insurance coverage to address specific contract obligations.
Precisely. It's about being proactive and understanding everything before you sign on the dotted line.
This is a great reminder that insurance isn't just about reacting to incidents after they happen. It's also about proactively minimizing risk.
I agree. And another key aspect of proactive risk management is having robust safety and training programs for your employees.
Right. Well-trained employees are less likely to make mistakes that could lead to accidents and claims. seems pretty straightforward.
It is, but the key is documentation, thoroughly documenting your safety protocols, training materials, and employee acknowledgements can be valuable if a liability claim arises.
So if we can show we've taken steps to prevent accidents and train our employees properly, it could help our defense if something goes wrong.
Absolutely. It shows you're taking safety seriously and have a culture of risk awareness. And don't underestimate the impact this can have on your insurance premiums. Insurers often offer lower rates to businesses with good safety records and risk management programs.
It's like getting rewarded for being responsible.
Yeah.
I like that. Are there any other pro tips you can share for staying ahead of the curve with commercial liability insurance?
One thing that often gets missed is regularly reviewing and updating your insurance coverage. It's easy to get caught up in the day-to-day, but you got to make sure your insurance is keeping up with your operations.
That makes sense. As our business evolves, our insurance needs might change. We might be taking on new risks without realizing it.
Exactly. New products, new services, new locations, even legal changes can create gaps in your coverage. Make it a habit to review your policies annually with your insurance agent.
It's like a yearly checkup for your business's insurance health.
That's a great way to put it. And speaking of your insurance agent, we've talked a lot about having a good relationship with them. Any final thoughts on how to make the most of that relationship?
I'm all ears.
Be open with your agent about your business operations, your concerns, and your risk tolerance. The more they know, the better they can tailor your coverage.
It's about trust and open communication.
Exactly. Don't be afraid to ask questions if you don't understand your policy or the claims process. Speak up, knowledge is power, and your insurance agent should be your trusted advisor.
That's great advice, and it fits with the idea of this deep dive, equipping ourselves with the knowledge to make informed decisions about our insurance. It's been an incredible journey through commercial liability insurance.
I've enjoyed it too, and I hope our listeners feel more empowered to navigate this world and protect their businesses.
I think the biggest takeaway for me is that insurance isn't just about checking a box or complying with regulations. It's about peace of mind, knowing you have a safety net to protect your hard work and livelihood.
Well said. It's about managing risks intelligently and making informed decisions for your business's success. And on that note, we'll wrap up our deep dive into commercial liability insurance. We hope you found it informative and empowering. Remember, knowledge is your best defense against risk.